This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by SMB Co., artist and author. You can find out more about her work at www.smbeiko.com. Subscribe to her website and blog for updates on her new work.
Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am your host, Gregory Kamichuk, and I am here with my long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, and we have brought, from the folds of time, through the mists of the past, a guest returning to us, somebody who I think is a writer and creative person with an enormous imagination and a unprecedented amount of integrity. Samantha Biko, welcome back to the podcast.
That's me stepping out of my... Oh, no, I'm so sorry, Dan. I was trying to get some good time warp Foley in there, and I overstepped. Well, why not overstep when you're coming back to a podcast?
The most return guests of all time on Super Pulp Science.
Yes, because sure. I was just around all the time and was just defaulted. But I guess I've said some things on the podcast that have been useful.
Of value to many. In fact, when you stop showing up, a couple of my Twitter followers texted to ask, is Sam ever coming back to the podcast?
What kind of falling out did you guys have?
We've remained a friend.
You I'm mean sorry, Sam with the I, followers? Or follow-
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we tell listeners, aside from the obvious world-changing event that caused us to be separate.
What event?
We don't talk about it anymore.
Sorry, I cryo-froze myself in March 2019. Oh, and I think I missed it.
You skipped it.
If only.
You had a life-changing event that occurred to you.
Mm-hmm.
I make it sound like a meteor struck, but...
No, I fell off my toilet and I hit my head. And when I came to, I invented the flux capacitor. No, that's not what happened. I had a bebé.
Bebé.
Wee! And his name is Wesley, and he is now 14 months old. So he has a job in a factory, like all the other Victorian babies of his stripe. No.
And so God. You're allowed to be here, because he's hard at work already.
No, it's because I employed someone else to look after him while I am here. Re-remembering that I used to do creative things, and I used to talk about publishing and writing books and doing all kinds of other things that did not include changing diapers and heating up tofu every single day, because that's all he wants to eat right now. I used to do other things, and so here I am.
You
that's
still do other
great
things.
Baby food tofu.
It never occurred to me.
Like yeah. Marshmallow with more savoriness to it.
It's so good.
Oh, and you could add whatever flavor you want to it.
This episode of Super Pulp Science is sponsored by tofu. 1,000 years old, full of protein. Get it today. It tastes like anything you cook it with. Don't let the detractors convince you that it sucks.
Like other 1,000-year-old ideas, mm-hmm. You write books.
I think so. I think I still do that. You and I were chatting about this before the podcast, but I do have a new project coming down the pipe, and I just received the first round of edits on it, and I had to sit down. I had to actually physically remove myself to a room with a door and sit down and focus on it, and I found it to be the hardest thing.
A room of one's own.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing. May I ask a question that, for the dear listener's sake, I asked her before the podcast started, so in the interest of transparency. How has your relationship with writing changed now that this life event has occurred?
Well, I used to be a cocky son of a bitch. Let's just say that. There are other creators out there who have gone on to have families or have other commitments, like jobs that are not in a creative field, that take you away from working on projects like books. But when you're in it and you're like, haha, here I am writing books. I can write a book in a month. Pfft, look at me. Tra-la-la. And you're prancing around and then you have a kid. And this is, I'm going to speak from the female identifying experience or the experience of the person having the child, physically having the child. you think it's like a sick day. You've been percolating this kid for 9 months. Great, whatever. You can go and do other things while you're doing that. And then the day comes when they arrive, and it's all great. They're healthy. They're out. But then it dawns on you, you don't get to rest. You don't get to go to sleep and have a nap and wake up refreshed. No, you're awake now.
That's when the work really begins,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, right? You've been forced to run a marathon, and you do not get to recuperate after. But then what the deeper layer is that's the next 18 years of your life.
At least,
But you imagine, oh, well, I've had this kid, I'll take a day off, whatever, and then I'll be back to it the next day. Aside from the fact that you have gone through a physical gauntlet, mentally, it is the worst. It is a terrible mire of not only just dealing with the chaos that a newborn brings, but with who you were. And that personhood we had a conversation earlier about this. It's like the person who you were detaches off of you and floats out in space. And they're still tethered to you because you can remember what it felt like to just prance around writing your novels and being like, oh, it's so easy. La, la, la. And you snap awake a year later from just focusing mostly on childcare and getting yourself upright every single day. And someone reminds you, you have a book. And you have to write it because you have a contract for it. And you're just reaching out for that person in space and you're just trying to pull them back in. And they're so far away. But you have to convince yourself and others.
You saw my wife.
I saw its mother.
You're referring to my wife.
Its mother, Mr. Thorne.
Do you think it's easier to pull that person back or create a new version?
You have to create a new version.
Yeah. I ask this because from my perspective, I have two kids and my wife is a very creative person and a writer and a person who outpours in a lot of different art forms. And when we had our first child, she often talked about this idea of the person I was, I can see still, but I don't have the energy to be them right now. And that creates this gulf and a little bit of shame and a little bit of self-loathing where you can see the person you were but not the person you are. And the worst I had to deal with is like a lack of sleep, but I never had to give up.
You don't sleep anyways.
Well, okay, fair enough.
So the person you became.
So it didn't bother me all that much, except for how to change the schedule in which I worked. But like you say, I don't sleep very much as it is, so not a huge detraction. It was hard for me as Tara's partner to watch that change in the person and to see that gulf and to see how it affects what they want and the ambition. I'm sure this happens to you too, but let me ask it as a question. When you do have a day to yourself now, do you find a impossibly large pressure to make the most of it as opposed to just appreciate the day?
Yes, but... because I have the privilege of, so I do still work full time. We discussed this in previous episodes. I'm social media content creator for the Facebook team at Crown Media for the Hallmark Channel and subsidiaries. So short form is I write Facebook posts. I went back to work 4 months postpartum because I get to work from home. I have a really great team and it's not it can be a high stress job, but it's not. Let me take that back. Let me walk that back. I sit at home and write Facebook posts for romance movies. So I work 4 days a week and I have like Saturday, Sunday, Monday where I can, those are like, oh, I might get time to myself. And that time is an hour or when my son is asleep because otherwise, so it's maybe equates to 2 to 3 hours a day. And I am always like, yes, when this time arrives, I'm going to work on my edits. I'm going to work on drawing this page to send to my colorist. Oh, yeah, I'm going to be so productive. And then all of a sudden, I only have 20 minutes left because I spent that time either trying to take care of myself because I'm still a person who requires that.
Nourishment, rest.
Nourishment, making food for the household or taking care of chores or whatever. And then you sit down and you're just like, oh, God, this is all the time I have. And it takes a lot of practice to not spend that 30 minutes just being, like you said, self-loathing, being ashamed, and like, why didn't I get anything done? And as artists, I think we can all say in this room, we are obsessed with productivity.
Ugh.
With it doesn't even matter what your other life responsibilities are. We equate our worth with how much we can get done.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we brag about, even though we have scraped ourselves to nothingness in order to achieve that. That's how we are comparing ourselves to each other and who's getting the most books out and who's getting the most work done. And it's you know this, Gregory. It is really, it's much harder when you have kids because they're people. And also they didn't choose to come here into this world.
And they become more people the older they get. And so they have more effect on your lives the older they get. And I mean, it's wonderful, but it's also the reality. It's like the cold, hard tally is that there's less and less time for your own ambitions as your kids get older, if you care to support their ambitions also.
The best is yet to come.
Yes, and to set a good example, because killing yourself is actually, Justin and I were talking a bit about this. Killing yourself in work can completely separate you from your family and what's important. And then you wake up and you're 65 and you're like, woohoo, I'm retired. But maybe that's that all those decades you've spent burning yourself out. You haven't been able to cultivate a healthy relationship with your family.
Yeah.
There's probably been resentment built up between you and them. And that's not healthy either.
Mm-hmm.
So also, I just want to take a sidebar to say, if you're an artist out there and you're thinking of having a family, you can do that. It's not impossible. And we're not here to tell you that it sucks. because I am every single day grateful that I had my son and that I did a bunch of things before he was born. I had a bunch of projects that at least I can look back and say, I did do that. And I can reassure myself that I did it before. I will be able to do it again. This stage of when they're really little and they need you the most, that doesn't last. He'll be in school before I know it. And like you said this earlier, you need to actually sit back and enjoy like these moments because they will be gone and you can write a book. You can work on your projects anytime. And your publisher, if you have a relationship with them that's great, they'll give you grace because they probably also have children too. It's not some alien concept that people have family lives. And that now more conversations are happening, not just between artists and creative people, but people in general, that you shouldn't be punished for having a family by your work. And I'm sorry, Justin and I talked so much before this and we got so much good material for this episode. But I was also saying to him that when you're a creative person, you are also your HR department. You have to protect your employee and we always fall short of that. How are you going to make art if you can't make it because you're not taking care of yourself, not resting, wreathed in self-loathing, not sitting back and absorbing the world around you, which is where art comes from. So that is very important. And when you have kids, yeah, you still have to make time to do that. And it becomes much harder, but you still
have
to do it.
We're this generation that's romanticized being an entrepreneur and being like your own little business and doing your own thing. And nobody really tells you that that's not just doing that one thing. It's all those other things that go along with it. Like you were saying, you have to be your own HR and marketing and all those departments. And I think a lot of times, your mental and personal health are one of the last things you consider. It's more what you can do, what you can produce, right?
Like you were saying before. Exactly.
There's another side to having a family, which is quite nice, though, I will say. And I'm sure Dan, who is here in the room, our producer, will agree to this. And Sam will, too.
I'll grab Justin's mic from him when I have something really important to say, but probably won't say much. But I can relate from the male perspective, from the person who did not physically have the child.
There's also a moment where you realize who you'd choose. If you're on the bridge and it's collapsing, and like if all of us are here together, my kids and you three, and the bridge is collapsing, and I'm holding on to your hand, Justin, and it looks like the cord is going to break, I'd look at my kids, I'd look at you, I'd say, I'm sorry, and I'd let you go, right? And you just know, there's a way you know who you'd choose. And there's some comfort.
Sam Biko came back on the show and Gregory admitted that he would let Justin die.
She stays.
There's a great story there where I would come back and possess you so I could get some more stories done.
Absolutely.
Like you have a blackout and suddenly there's this shattered vector graphic novel
Yeah, that just pages. Pours out of me in Shattered Vector. Dad, you didn't use Illustrator before today. I don't know what's happening. Right? But it's this idea that you there's a piece of you that becomes completely attached to another person, and you would do anything to protect that bond. So all joking aside, I don't know who I'd choose if it was you and Sam. Dan and I would wave as you both fell to your, I guess.
Maybe you should work out a bit more so you can save us both.
Save you both. Well, you took one of the rings down, so I've been doing less pull-ups.
You only used one ring when we had two rings up there anyways.
I know, because my arms are made of sticks.
Dear listener, Gregory is pointing to, we have these great wooden beams in our studio, and we have hung Olympic rings from the one beam so that we could do pull-ups every hour on the hour. We've slipped in recent times.
In the last year since the event.
And for a while I had a boxing bag actually hanging from the ceiling. And I thought, now that I had my own boxing bag, I'd work out so much. And that turned out not to be the case.
Yeah. So speaking of this measure of productivity, right? Even us, we feel ashamed of these tiny goals we set for ourselves that didn't work.
Just to dial it back, we chatted about this, but I was working on this comic that I made called Krampus Is My Boyfriend.
See episode 104, Sam's last podcast interview.
That's
right.
We
talked about all things Krampus. I wanted to follow up.
Yes, so I am still working on it. In 2021, I received two arts grants, one for issue 4 and one for issue 5 from the Manitoba Arts Council and from the Canada Council. And that was really wonderful, and I was very shocked, but great. And so I've been working on issue 4, and before a baby, I was able to hammer out 2 issues a year, and each issue is about 75 pages. And I was doing I do all the writing and the artwork and the coloring and then the formatting, and then I would put it on Webtoon.
So 150 pages of art and colors and writing plus the novel work you're already doing.
Yes. Oh boy. I remember my days. I would wake up in the morning, come down, make coffee, 8 a.m. I'd be at my desk, I'd be working, and I'd be able to also continue doing Hallmark work at the same time because, as I said, privileged, get to work from home. And then I would be able to stop at 5 and have dinner and just enjoy the evenings, or I would walk the dog in the afternoon. Oh, wasn't that so nice? Let's see. This year, I was very certain. I did start drawing while Wesley was a newborn, and I was sleeping in chunks, where you convince yourself that you're getting 6 hours of sleep, but really it's
2 hours at a time.
Exactly. 1.5 to 2 hours at a time, because you're constantly being woken up, or you're waking up to make sure the baby is still alive, and you're doing that constantly.
Dan raised his eyebrows. He knows that feeling. Every parent knows that feeling. You wake up and you just check to make sure, are they breathing? And you just watch, and there's like a long break because they're asleep and in the blue twilight of the
nightlight.
You wonder, and so then you touch their chest because you think you'll be lovingly, and you're just a little bit nervous, and then as soon as you touch them, they wake up, and now you're up.
Yep. And I really thought I was going to be able to finish at least one issue. It's only 75 pages. Well, I'm at page 25. It's November. I had to hire a colorist because there's no way to be able to do that. And I'm trying my best. I was like, maybe I'll make it to 75 by the end of the year. It's the end of November. It's not going to happen.
Okay, let's dig into that. I want to unpack that. How do you feel about that? What is your relationship with that now?
What's your self-talk
like?
Yeah.
How'd you find your colorist?
Oh, boy. Well, I won't go like super crazy. I felt really ashamed. And having a child is really, really difficult. Not even just the bearing them, delivering them, but adjusting to, it's like every single bone in your body has been broken and you are in traction. You have to get up every single day. You have to run that marathon again. And then when your bones heal, like you said, you're a completely different person. Not at all the same. And you have to deal with this, like, I can't be this productive anymore. And you have to face it head on. And it's because of the choice you made. It's not your child's fault. They manifested because of you. They didn't just pop up on your doorstep and they're like, I'm here now. You've made this choice.
Yours didn't come by stork? See, we had that advantage.
No, I grew mine in a crystal grow kit. And then the crystal opened and my son was there.
Oh.
And Yeah. So trendy. Oh, so trendy. So organic.
Yeah.
Very vegan. Yeah, very lots of shame. There was even shame associated with me going back to work after 4 months, which is ludicrous. Why didn't I take
the same house?
Yeah. Why didn't I take the full year? I had no childcare. It was pandemic. Couldn't let anyone in my house. Couldn't see anyone. So I had no assistance from grandparents or family members or friends. So that was really hard. It was also really hard to be pregnant and not being able to share any of it with any person.
Hmm.
So extremely isolating.
All that glow.
Just wasted. Just, now I mean, yeah, I'm going to have another one so I can actually...
Share the glow.
Share the glow.
Have no fear, little one. I am here to protect thee.
As artists, I'm speaking for myself, whenever I am in a time of trauma, I turn to this rich inner world that I spent my entire life cultivating and which has made me into an artist. And when you have to also face the fact that I can't make anything, I can't share it with anyone, I just have to go inside and experience it, and that has to be enough. Yeah, it takes a lot to deal with it. And then when, you know, a year passes and you've adjusted, making very large air quotes, to just this new routine, this new reality, and you start talking to your publisher again, and they want to see your new work. And I will maybe get into this if you want to.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I have a new series. So for previous episodes, I talked about my young adult fantasy series, The Realms of Ancient. It's a 3-book novel series that wrapped up in 2019. So I have a new series. It's going to start in 2023. It's a 5-book series, which is called The Brindle Watch Quintet. And the first book is
what
called...
What I like is how you were able to hold back doing anything too ambitious as you return?
I'm just going to... Oh, God. What have I done? Yeah, and I didn't expect them to take all of them. So anyway...
Tell us about...
This is similar to your first... Yeah, your
yes,
first trilogy.
Yes, but this trilogy. Time I hope I improved, whereas I went to them. So the first book is called The Stars of Mount Quix. I wrote the first 100 pages of this book after I wrote my first book, which is The Lake in the Library. I wrote it when I was a teenager.
There's a great audiobook of that out as well.
No, that was Sign of the Fox. Where you guys, you downloaded it, and we were on a road trip, and you started playing it, and I was like, no.
Sam would not listen to her own book with us giving commentary on a 8-hour car ride for some reason.
We listened to a Stephen King, I think. No, we listened to Steve Martin's biography.
That's right.
Yes.
Autobiography instead. In any case, so I wrote The Stars of Mount Quix, first 100 pages, didn't really know where it was going, shoved it back in the metaphorical trunk, lived my life for 11 years, wrote other books, became a stronger writer, came back to this draft because I was still interested in the story, rewrote it, completed it, and it also sat in the trunk for a while. But while I was on the con circuit, I think in 2017, 2018, I was like, oh, this could be a series, so I planned out all of the sequels.
So you're like actually doing that story that young Sam wasn't quite ready to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Now more experienced Sam is ready to make it an actual thing.
Yes. So that really goes to show that any idea that you have, when you come back to it, it will still have merit, and it can become better because of not just that you're a better writer, but that you're a person more experienced in the world.
I think a lot of writers are rewriting their old stories over and over.
That's how we all started, right? 14, 15, 16-year-old. Every creative has that epic story that they want to tell, but they're not ready to tell it yet.
And when I first sort of, quote unquote, broke into publishing with the Imagination Manifesto, I had a short story in there called The Tomorrow Society, which essentially was an idea I could not let go. And part of it became a different graphic novel called Infinitum. A later draft of that idea, completely reskinned and different, but the impetus to write it remained with me, was not satisfied by this one thing I had done. And then another element of the Tomorrow Society became the Midnight City graphic novel series. So I basically had two ideas that should have been, or one story with too many ideas in it, and a more mature writer recognized that I should have those as separate things, and then I could explore them more in a measured way. And even now, as I return back to what is essentially the content of Midnight City to make the role-playing game, I realized the mistakes I made of trying to jam too much into that volume, and I'm paring that down even one more step. So it's almost like an act of distilling that I go through. I'm not sure if that's parallel to you or if that's what this Wix series is like for you, but...
It must be done.
Yeah, it's...
Sounds like expanding more than distilling.
Well, sort of, and also just... As I get older, it really is important to confront your weaknesses, not even just in how you create stories, but how you work and what frustrates you about the process. So, like you just said, what really frustrates me is that I know I'm exhausted and I was burnt out before the pandemic and before having a kid. And yet here I am, I've taken on a 5-book I haven't even taken it on. I did this to myself. I chose this. I created this. And
went looking for it, in fact.
Went looking for it, in fact. And I'm committed to it. And now I have to do the work. I want to bring you into this conversation, Justin, because you don't have kids.
I am feeling a little privileged over here with zero children.
The look that Dan just gave you out of the side of his eye is amazing.
But we all have our crosses to bear. And one issue you have had, and this is like what I'm just talking about, is that you have a personal problem with saying no to people who want to hire you. And I guess I also have a problem. Like, I'm like, oh, Justin, you just need to learn to say no. And I'm sitting here going, I need to stop burying myself because I am literally just digging a hole and just putting the dirt.
You need to say no to yourself, Sam.
Yes, but I mean, so do you.
Well, Justin and I were having a conversation here in this very same spot not long ago about what happens when the spotlight, I mean, I'm paraphrasing it now, but when the spotlight of somebody else's interest lands on you, saying like, hey, I'd like to hire you for this job, or I think you'd be perfect for this work or whatever. And that shows up in your inbox. You get this flush of, oh, they like me. They're special. They see me for what I am. And so you want to say yes to that work, but you have other projects that would pay the bills anyway that you have made of your own volition, and they just require you to put that time in. Why don't you explain some of that that's been going on for you?
So I've been kind of analyzing that a lot lately, and I think part of it is I have a lot of leftover habits of when I was a starving artist and really wanting to make my mark in this industry, I didn't say no to a lot of things. That was how you get your name out there and get a foothold in this industry, is you do as many projects for as many people as you can. Eventually you start to get noticed, and I think I still have that starving artist mentality. So recently I think that's still clicking in. I have a very hard time saying no to anybody. I want to do all these projects.
Psychologists would call it mood congruency.
Mood congruency.
Mood congruency is your tendency to have behavior that matches the last time you were in the same mood. And so when you are feeling like, oh man, I wonder if my work's any good. I wonder if people will like it. And then anybody shines that light on you, you're like, ah, validation. And so then you turn towards the instant validation rather than the self-directed knowledge that your work is already good enough. The proof is all around you that your work is good enough. And you can say no to this instant validation and move on without the need of that spotlight.
Part of it too is I got very good and efficient at setting up, like, quoting, setting up, getting that ball rolling. It was always a bit of it's like a learning curve to like get into a project with a company or somebody. And just throughout the years, I think I've gotten better and better at streamlining that, like, okay, you want to work on this? Here's how it works. Like,
here's let's my pull day the rate. Right. Here's my ask.
Yeah. Like I've streamlined that to such a degree that now when somebody wants to work on a project, instead of being like a week long back and forth, I can get that done in 2 or 3 emails. And that's kind of shot me in the foot the last couple months, saying, yes, I'll work on that, but we can't start until November. And then November hits and oh my God, what have I done? I have a completely stacked month with all these cool projects. Don't get me wrong. Like they're all things I want to do, but I also...
But they're building someone else's dream instead of yours.
Exactly.
Someone's borrowed your talent to help them. Right? And so that can be a challenge. And, you know, when we're talking about, there's only so many, you know, the analogy used so often these days is the spoons that you have. There's only so many spoons in that drawer. And if you give them all out, then you don't have any left, right? And so kids are always asking for a few of those spoons no matter what, mm-hmm. right? Because whether you love them or hate them or they just need them, yeah. right?
And I think changing your perspective and not looking at it, I mean, before, because I was so burnt out, when I would get client requests or anything, I would get upset. And it wasn't at the person. It was at the concept that someone would become entitled to my time. They would pay me for it. But
they're stealing a little chunk of your life away.
You're taking that away from you. And that is your greatest resource is time outside of work. You have other things. And if you, like Gregory said, you have a family, your children do need to have your time. Yeah. You can't just have them, commodify them, and then put them in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
If you want them to grow and to become good humans, that is your greatest lifelong project. And also you want to be creating an example to them that when they get older, that their time is valuable as well, and that they don't owe anyone anything unless there's some kind of give and take relationship. And with a lot of people who work in jobs, that's any job. That's all it is you have been employed by someone. They now are entitled to your time in exchange for money. And then however long you're going to spend in that job and how much of yourself you're going to put into it takes away from other parts of your life.
Yeah.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
The real cost of anything is the amount of time you spend on it.
But there's this social pressure, and it's magnified by the internet of you need to hustle. Like, if you want to be successful, hustle, hustle, hustle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you take a break and you go online, and all you see is all these amazing projects that other people have just completed that have, you know, it feels like they're outpacing you and getting ahead of you.
Right. And well, all politics aside, that's just a function of late-stage capitalism, is that you need to hustle and leverage that time. And we all live in a society that uses money. So, like, you know, me too. So mm-hmm. I have to do it, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to recognize that push that you're receiving from outside is from outside. And comparison is that thief of joy. And so if you say, oh, this person seems to hustle so much and their house is bigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that matters to you, that comparison, I think you're leaving the important part out, right? If you need a bigger house because you have a person in your home that needs more space or has some special needs or has some requirement for that extra space, that should be your motivation for getting that bigger house, not because someone else you know got a bigger house with a bigger deal or a film deal or something, right?
Bigger house will not make you happy. Let me just get out in front of you here. First of all, you have to clean it all. Second of all, you have to pay to heat it. You're where we are. It is fun. Like, yeah, so it's this idea of hustling. And then it's like Gregory said, it's like for commodities. Like, are commodities the important part? If that is important, I need you artists to go on YouTube, because there's tons of people who will talk about it, and learn about financial management and learn about investing, because that's how you're going to retire early. You're going to work and you're going to put away a little bit, and you're going to put it in savings where you cannot touch it. Maybe in the market, maybe in some kind of other bank related product that will earn you interest. Okay.
NFTs?
No.
No, not
no,
NFTs.
No, no.
So I will give you a good example of this that my kids and I have been experimenting with. If you guys want to find the game Kingdom Two Crowns, there's a little guy who eventually shows up in your village, and he's like the chamberlain.
The banker guy?
And he's, well, what he does is he is a compound interest accruer within your village. And so when you pay him a certain number of coins that run the entire economy of your little village, he puts it in a warehouse and you watch him stack it up. But then he pays out interest every time you visit him again, right? And so if you, and you know, my kids are 10 and 12 now, and they are learning this idea that by putting money away and not touching it, even though you could have an extravagant horse to gallop around your kingdom in now, if you wait after a couple of rotations of the sun, then that guy pays you back a little bit more interest, which then allows you to buy a big griffin mount.
Exactly. And also, I would like to point out that having an investment strategy or having financial management, that is a very privileged thing. I was completely uneducated or unaware of it. The only reason I am is because my husband, his parents were super into investing. Not like crazy. They were very moderate, low risk investors. Now they've become better at it. They're in their 70s. But I came from a working class background where my parents, the cash was king, and you don't have a credit card and you just put your money in a savings account and you never touch it because you're scared of like banks and you're scared of the market. And I mean, it's a very
long... if you came out of the 80s when interest rates were 19%, exactly. 20% here in Canada, there's a rational reason to fear that. But yeah. I will put this in a practical realm. If you are listening to this and you know nothing about investing, you don't know anything, but you just want to make books or you want to make art and that's why you follow our podcast, control your means of production. And we've talked about that many times here. Don't let a publisher produce a book that you're only going to make 2,000 copies of anyway. Produce those 2,000 copies yourself, because then if you're only going to sell 500 copies of that book, you get all $22 instead of 10% of whatever they're getting. And so if you're only going to produce a couple of things once in a while, you might as well shake off the stigma that you're not with a big publisher and instead recognize that if you write books, you are a writer. You can have an editor substantively look at it and make it the best book possible. But then when it comes time to produce that book, you can produce it yourself. When it comes time to produce that artwork, yes, you have a big canvas painting that you did, but you can also produce prints for 60, 70% cost, or cents at cost of each print, and then sell those at a markup. And by controlling that means of production, you're investing in yourself, right? Yes, it means that you might have to put a few thousand dollars away, but that's all in order to get started. And that is not an enormous amount of money over the course of a year, say, of working a regular job.
So I was curious, I'd like to ask you guys both, if today there was a banking error and suddenly there's $1 million in your account. So
bank
you are now,
error in your
there's
favor.
There's a bank error in your favor and
all
you are now
Fight
retired.
Club came true and everyone's debt was wiped away.
Yeah.
What does retirement look like for you, Gregory?
What does retirement look like for me? Very much like this right now.
Right.
Yeah. This is what I would do
this
with
is
my
what
retirement.
You...
I'd make books. I'd spend 5 hours in the library every day, which I do now at home, making stuff. And then I'd spend the rest of the time with my kids and my wife, which I do now.
Exactly.
So, no golfing.
No golfing. In fact, I might actively try to close golf courses around the world if I had more free time. Do you know that most golf courses in L.A. pay less than a dollar in taxes
because
a year
of some
in property
old
taxes?
Law, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah. So I might actively... try to stop golf.
Now, see, again, when we were having this conversation, Justin, we came to the conclusion that people who golf and people who that's what you think of in retirement, you're hanging out at the country club, you're going on lavish vacations, is because you've spent the 35 prime years of your life working so that you can not work. You have not spent any time cultivating, maybe not a relationship with your family, but also with yourself. So you have no hobbies, no interests. You have maybe a time, like time passing pursuits, like you're a professional television watcher. But, you know, for the most part, you're so focused on working and being tired from and trying to recover from working, and you only get 2 weeks paid vacation a year. You're 65 and now you're not working. You're like, well, now do I do? Uh-oh, don't do that. That's why self-care and developing personhood is important. Mm-hmm. I'm outside
and
of
trying
your job.
To develop skills that you are currently no good at, mm-hmm. right? Just for the sake of building yourself up a little bit. Like the notion of the polymath used to be something that people aspired to, right? Like you could write a little bit, you could box a little bit, you could ride a horse, you could engage in public speaking. These were things that, you know, people would try, whether they were good at it or not, they would try to cultivate these different facets of their life. And now it seems to be that people are just told, go to work, then watch TV. And I don't think that that ultimately leads to a self-fulfilling life when the work ends or right. Netflix is broken.
And I think the one of the silver linings of the pandemic is and the conversation is very ongoing, and but at least it's loud, that people realized how much time they waste and how much money they waste going into an office and how that money right. could be saved. Mm-hmm. There was a really, it's either Bloomberg or New York Times or Washington Post, where they talked about how the average person, after working from home for a year, saved $5,500 from not having to commute, not going out to eat, not right. going out to get coffee every single day. And they were shocked. And also that they spent more time actively in their household. And the dimension of that, the handoff, was that it was very stressful mm-hmm. and you had no childcare and your children, you had to be a homeschooler and also working your job at the same time. But to kind of pull the sheet off of your head where you were convinced you have to go into an office every day in order to make a living. And that people have just whole cloth said, I'm just going to quit. If you're going to force me to go back to work, employer, and employers are causing a, you know, big stink about it. And we want
priorities have been realigned because mm-hmm. people yes. spend time with themselves.
The rest, of course, history.
I'll mention this. My father and I, through most of my teenage years, we did not see eye to eye on whether or not a creative life was the right way to go. And so we did not have the greatest relationship. He is now in his 80s, and, you know, I'm an ancient gray-bearded man now myself. And so we've repaired that relationship long ago. And when the event occurred, and right, he cannot see anybody because at that point there's no vaccine. We don't know what's really happening. He's completely...
He's in that, the most vulnerable group.
He's in the most vulnerable... He has to be alone, and he's alone in his house for weeks and months on end, you know, and I would call him.
Your dad's a social butterfly.
He's a very social person, and I would call him, and I would say, you know, how are you doing? You know, we would talk sometimes every couple of days or at least once a week, and I'd say, how are you doing? He's like, well, I'm very lonely, and this was about 5 months in. He says, I'm very lonely. I miss your mother deeply, but I've also realized something, which is kind of nice. He says, I actually like myself. And so I don't mind all this time I have to spend. And my father has always been a person, despite the times that we didn't get along, he's always been a person who took me out into the woods, taught me how to pick berries, pick mushrooms, took me to other cities, flew other places, taught me how to talk to anybody anywhere, taught me how to try to empathize with strangers and really see where they were at. And try to get, so he's a person who has always tried to build up different parts of himself, whether or not it had anything to do with his business life. And so I definitely inherited that just by virtue of being in the same household. But I started to really appreciate that myself when the pandemic meant, that we just had to be home for a whole year without going out of the house. And I was like, awesome. Right? I can just stay home and be with myself and make things.
And also that everyone around you also had to stay home. So every single person is having the exact same experience as you. And the FOMO is for maybe how things were, you know, the FOMO was for yesterday where things were fine and normal, but it's not now looking and being like, oh, that person's going there and I should mm-hmm. do that too. That person's getting this deal, so I should get that too. Everyone had to take a pause. And so everyone just got to be on the same level and everyone had to have their own kind of hard times in the event.
And ask themselves, if I got sick and died tomorrow, would I have been happy up until now?
Yeah. Right? And the only thing we were comparing each other to is, do you have toilet paper? Have you been making sourdough? How is homeschooling going for you with your kids? Just all the things that I've... just trying to remember what things were like at the beginning. That's all you were thinking of. So you were able to go inward to yourself and to your family. And when you are forced to do that and you look around and you're like, yes, that's why I have been going to this job or why I've been making this sacrifice. It was for these people. And I think for a lot of people who were trapped at home working, they realized that their family or, you know, their home life is what's important to them. So people are thinking of ways to have that all the time. Yeah. Be like, wow, I got to spend all this time with my family at least. But how can I
keep
that?
It could be the family
that
you're born into or the family you chose, right?
Exactly.
We just, by family, I think we mean the people you choose to spend a lot of time with.
Or even just that concept of the life that you're working, that you're killing yourself working so hard for. people were able to realize that I could have that now. Why don't I just do what I can to have that now? Because maybe you were trapped in the rat race and you had absolutely no mental energy to imagine like how you could get there. Now that you've experienced it, now the world is slowly opening up again. I think a lot of folks have been like, well, but I liked that. I liked certain aspects of that. And I liked being in control. And I don't want to give my control back to someone who's demanding I come in for a meeting that can just be an email. And if they aren't willing to be flexible on that, then I can just say sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I can create my own either job or career, if it's creative or if it's based off of something you were doing before. And now all these employers are like, oops, we can't convince people to stay anymore. And we're mad.
Yeah.
But they got away with it for so many years. So.
And in Justin's case, I would say I observe you, and you can speak to this, I think, obviously. If not for the event, you wouldn't have taken the time to build up what is, air quotes, the responsible side of your business, which is a working, functioning website that allows people anywhere in the world to have access to your hard work. You were doing so many shows where the shortcut was, I'll just go there, bring it to them.
Yep.
And then when you couldn't, you built up this other side, which is functionally the mature choice, the more thoughtful, mature way of solving the problem.
It's, yeah, I think, and Sam tried to drill this into me for years.
Years. I still haven't learned the lesson, but it's because it's their fault.
Yeah. Website
and
is...
to build the website for you.
Yes. You really need a website. It is just something that you need. It fills so many... It has so many uses, and it filled so many gaps in my business. So being able to like sit back and develop that and get the online store figured out and just actually like shipping my artwork around the world, I'd always just kind of pants that whole process. And now I was able to take the time and figure out how to do it correctly, which led to me being able to do a successful Kickstarter. Had I not figured out my own online store, I don't think I ever would have been able to make that Kickstarter work. And then...
Or even just to sit down and quietly think and plan a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
Without having to be like, well, it's not really a priority right now.
And
I have
in
2 days,
I have to
show.
Be on a plane to...
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I'll think about it when I get back. And then you do get back and you're just trying to recover because the next show is in 2 weeks and you have to get all these prints done. You just can never get to it. And this allowed a lot of people, like this pause, it allowed them to just get to things mm-hmm. that allowed them to take back the time that's been stolen from them or that they've allowed to be entitled to by to other people. Mm-hmm. They can take it back and they can create a different shape of the world that isn't a 9-to-5 with a 2-hour commute where you don't get to see your family for 35 years.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say, too, we were all very lucky in different ways. Everyone in this room is lucky in that there was support systems that allowed us to reflect in that time separated rather than panic, scrounge, have to go to work into dangerous situations, which many people did.
Mm-hmm.
But that, to me, became a... the phrase I'd say to myself is, how dare I not...
You have the obligation to... Because you're in that place of privilege, you're obligated to really utilize this weird
gift.
Time. Yeah,
it's a gift. And I started to see it as a gift. And then it meant that the part of me that would used to procrastinate, you know, about where will this project go or what will it become or where it could go. And I waste all this time and energy deciding these imaginary paths, right? Which then are just between you and getting the work done. I would not worry about. Because who knew what the afterpath would be? That this, it was kind of like self-work. I was working on myself as well as working on these projects. And because I tried to manage that time in a mature way as a parent, because I had to portion it out, it meant that I didn't waste time thinking about what might have been or what could be. I would just say, okay, I have 2 hours to work on this draft right now. Whether I feel like it or not, I'm going to do it. And even if it's bad, at least I'll have done whatever I could do in 2 hours.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I struggle with that. I was listening to some older podcasts, and you brought this up a couple times, that like, you know, when you're a busy parent, when you have a real job, like you only get 10 minutes to write, like you should use that 10 minutes to write. And maybe it's because I run my own schedule, but find like it takes me a little more time to get mentally prepared to sit down and paint. And if I only have half an hour, it doesn't seem like I have enough time to really get into that painting right now and then have to leave it. Like if by the time that half an hour is up, I'm going to be so into that piece, I'm going to be late for whatever I'm supposed to do next.
Right.
You know, like
maybe it's because you're a better artist than me. I'm able to like break off.
Just take a bite of something. And I've been noticing that with jumping around to a bunch of different projects, just taking a bite out of projects here and there, I feel like the excitement is getting lost on the piece versus if I just sat and worked on it for like 2 days straight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Because I've been taking bites of projects and that's all I've been able to do for at least 10 years.
But that seems to be the way you can work, right? Like you're better at that than I am, maybe. I have to sit and work on the same thing.
I think it became that way because I didn't give up. And then I'll bring it back around to Tara also, that when I saw everything she had to give up completely in that role of a mother, it also became a how dare I, right? Be like, oh, well, I can't spend all day just sit lying in a field dreaming up my next novel project. Now I have to like be responsible for something. How could I be upset at that?
You could if you're a deadbeat artist dad.
Yeah, I guess so, if I was a deadbeat artist dad. But I was trying not to be.
The hospital, Mr. Thorne, the night your son was born.
One thing that occurred to me as you guys were talking, and Sammy, you were talking about having a baby and how difficult it is as an artist. And I know that you weren't in quite the same situation, Greg, because you had a day job. You were a teacher.
I did, yeah.
So you did have that security of having that day job. So it's not quite the same. Although you have a day job too, I guess.
I do, yes.
Yeah, so it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I don't begrudge anyone a day job. In fact, I encourage it, especially if you're under a lot of stress right. as an artist. The day job is the best way to get rid of the everyday real life stresses, right? Which is, how am I going to pay the bills and how will everybody eat, right? So if you can solve that with the day job, that's what you should do. The hard part, and what we're all talking about, is how do you manage the part of you that is left over to make your own thing come
true?
There
is so little of you left over.
When there's so little, it's sliced so thin. And my day job is one that I really have never given up, even though now I don't really get paid for it. I love teaching. I gained so much from it. And as a person who struggles with an overinflated ego versus the actual accomplishments of my ambitions, teaching was always a way that it balanced that, because there was always a kid who told you the truth, right? There's always a 14-year-old willing to tell you to F off, Mr. C. Just help me with my spelling, right? And that really brings you back down to earth no matter how puffed up you were. And so I've gone back to teaching at university a number of times, in temporary roles or as a writer in residence. I've gone back to the high schools and taught. I've gone back to the middle school. I like revisiting that because it grounds me in what people actually need, which is to know that their ideas can become something.
I think it would be fair to say that the three of us we're all in different stages or currently or just life frames of how we manage our art, our day jobs, our obligations, and that to the people listening to this, how we cope with how do we make art because we have all of these things. We have families that are at like new babies, kids that are like, you know, 10 and up, no kids, but still career ambitions.
This I do is have a rambunctious dog.
You know what? That's still a thing you have to deal with, you have to cope with that isn't your art. This is a moving target. This is not like I have arrived and this is what works and now this is how I'm going to be for the next however many decades.
That never happens. You never arrive.
Never.
As you're growing up, you always think there's going to be a point where you arrive and...
You don't.
You never do.
There's one place you arrive and then don't leave.
The grave?
That's what I'm getting.
Yes.
We're all gonna
because
die
we're
someday.
All going to die someday and that's usually how we wrap these up. But I just wanted to say that... It's always going to change some aspect of how you work, your family dynamic, your just life circumstances are always going to change. And you just have to become better at pivoting and making the most out of the time that you're given. And you can complain and whine that you're tired because we all get it. We've all been tired, burnt out. We've all been there. But at the end of the day, the only person responsible for you getting to that thing that really makes you happy is you. And you have to, it takes discipline, it takes sacrifice, and it takes a lot. There are aspects of it that don't even have a name, but it takes something that you have to be.
Keep chasing.
Yes. You have to be willing to chase it if you want to get there.
Well, thank you so much for your thoughts and ideas and sufferings that you shared with us today. Dear listener, I hope that you can find some time in your day today to do a thing that you most want to do just for you. This is Gregory Kamichuk encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.